Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 5. And the Steelers are getting ready for their first playoff game, Dave, coming up 2 days from now. We've gone through kind of the hard part of training camp. Now we get some activity, some real football to talk about. Let me just ask you this, as we've gone through this. You know, of course, you and I haven't been up in at La Trobe, St. Vincent College, to actually see this. But from the reports, from talking to Alex, from the other stuff you've read, what's the most interesting story to come out of training camp to date?
The most interesting story to date, I would have to say maybe Mike Hilton. You know, the emergence of Mike Hilton, the young former undrafted cornerback out of Mississippi. I guess that would be if we're talking camp darling wise, you know, and camp phenom wise, actual players and performance wise, I would probably say Mike Hilton would be the biggest story. Second to that, I guess, would be the Martavis Bryant still not being on the field. Here we are, you know, a couple of weeks into training camp now. Training camp's over halfway complete. There's what, I think 5 or 6 practices left after today. We don't know yet if today's the day that Martavis Bryant will be back on the field. I know there was a report by Jerry Dulac a few days ago, I think Sunday night to be specific, saying that I think a source told him that this will be the week. But
you know, do you have any greater understanding of what the deal is?
No.
Me neither. I mean, it's phenomenal.
You know, the Steelers seem to be acting, you know, everyone down from Art Rooney II to Kevin Colbert to Mike Tomlin. The what I read into some of the things that they've said is, you know, we think Martavis is doing everything that he needs to do, and he's acting great, he's looking great, he's running great, he's this, he's that, the other, and now we're just at the mercy of the NFL because of how deep one thing that Colbert's continued to say was how deep Martavis was into this thing, you know, into the program. So, you know, I floated that theory out there with you, I think, a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, talking about clinical resources being a speculative reason why. But, I mean, if that was, how long does something like that, you know, take to actually get cleared up? So there's something going on. The common narrative with Steelers fans is Roger Goodell's just being an ass to the Steelers.
Which is probably not the case.
Well, I can't confirm or deny that, but
I don't think the NFL commissioner's walking around holding grudges against teams and just trying to make life difficult. I honestly don't.
No, I'm with you. Overall here, but there's obviously something that has this thing held up. I wish I knew, and I know all the beat writers. I know everybody, fans in general, wish we knew what the deal here was, but we don't. It sounds like it's going to happen sooner or later. I think Art Rooney II even said, you know, any day now during an interview Friday night on Sirius XM NFL Radio. But, you know, until it happens, you know, all we can do, I think, is speculate about it at this point. So I would say, you know, the Martavis Bryant would be the biggest takeaway. And then, you know, a guy like Mike Hilton, probably second. Geez, you know, so hard not being at Latrobe.
Well, you know, the good thing is that, you know, we're not talking about so-and-so being out for the season, because, you know, every day you get past that happening, which we've seen, you know, plenty of guys in NFL camp so far, probably 10 to this point in the season who were out for the year because of an injury, so they haven't had that, fortunately.
Exactly, and just keep your fingers crossed and knock on wood, you know, moving forward, that remains the same. However, as I like to say, they have like 17 or 18 guys, you know, dealing
not with... Not playing.
Yeah, not practicing or whatnot, and, Marquise, you know, a few guys that you kind of wonder what's going on with, Marquise Pouncey, guys that we don't actually know what their ailments are, you know, specifically. I know Pouncey has a wrap on one of his legs. Of course, Villanueva missed practice after being evaluated with a concussion. A lot of bumps and bruises, but you're right. As far as guys that we think the Steelers will be depending on heavily this year, nobody looks like they're headed to IR at this point. But there are four, you know, preseason games remaining for this team, so just keep your fingers crossed when it comes to that.
No practice is obviously a bad thing for certain guys. Tell me if anything's changed in your thinking about two guys specifically. First, Sammy Coates.
Man, he needs to get on the field. You know, he needs to do something during the preseason to show us that this is the Sammy Coates of the first five games last season and not the Sammy Coates past that point.
Let me ask you, here's a question for you, and I want to get into this as we go through the show a little bit today. You know, we're long removed from the 2016 season, so I don't know how well we would have done the day the season ended at this, but I've got the Steelers snap counts in front of me, and I don't want you to pull it up. Steelers played, had 1,083 offensive snaps last year. What percentage of the snaps do you think Sammy Coates played?
Oh, I've seen this before. Wasn't it around 33% or so?
Yeah, very good. 29%. About that. And I have to assume that so he played a total offensively of 313 snaps. I would bet that at least 150 of those came in the first five games. At least half of his playing time was in the first five games.
Probably a little bit more than that, right? Because
yeah, possible.
It slowly started to dwindle, and then man, there were late in the season. You're talking, handfuls barely.
Handfuls barely, exactly.
And you know, most of the time he got, of course, was on special teams. So, yeah, you know, they tried to work him back from that. You remember the Baltimore game after he suffered that hand injury? Seems like he played a decent amount of snaps in that game, and then of course he had the drop in the end zone, you know, late in that game that would have made that game a lot more interesting had he held on to that one. And it just from there, it seemed like they just yanked him out.
In fact, I can give you the exact number of the 313. I think he played, I said 150, it's 196. So he went 44, 35, 40, 33, 44 snaps in the first five games. So that's 196 out of his 313. And from there, he went 17-7, 45 in the Baltimore game, 2-1-10, 4-1-30 in the last game against the Bengals. In week 14, he didn't play after that.
Do we know any? I mean, is Sammy Coates still the player that we thought he was coming out of Auburn? And that that is a big play receiver that will occasionally have drops, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was having this conversation last night about who was going to make the team, and one of the guys I was with was totally ready to give up on Sammy Coates, and I just said very simply that if it's Sammy Coates and Darius Heyward-Bey, I mean, I'm going to keep Sammy Coates because he showed he could play some special teams last year, and he's a bigger upside receiver than Darius Heyward-Bey. So my answer to that is yes, but if he were to miss the entire preseason, he puts himself at risk.
Yeah, especially when you consider, I mean, we'll see how many – we know they're going to keep five. They possibly going to keep six. Alex Kozora still pushes for them to keep seven. I think seven's a little pushing the table, but you can make arguments going through position group by position group that potentially seven get kept. I think in order for Sammy to make it, though I think they probably need to keep seven because I'm not sure. Look, we don't know what's really going on with Martavis Bryant behind the curtain right now. Totally. Is there a potential for you know, in short, how comfortable are you right now with Martavis never having a problem off the field again moving forward? And if you can't give me 100% guarantee on that, then I think I'd much rather have a guy like Justin Hunter than I would, because Justin Hunter's done a lot more in the NFL than Sammy Coates has so far. We got to keep what Sammy Coates has done in perspective here. He has what? Just 20. How many catches does he have total for how many yards and just two touchdowns? You know, so far during his career.
In terms of Sammy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, right. Look, he did. He you know, obviously his rookie season was a non-event, and he did, you know, a couple things at the very end of that season and caught two passes in the playoff game against Denver. And then last year he had, you know, five good weeks, and then he's shown something. But again, if Martavis, and I know you wrote about this, you know, is it possible for the Steelers to trade a receiver? The only receiver they can trade is Sammy Coates, because Sammy Coates might get you a sixth or seventh round draft pick. I mean, nobody's, you know, you're not trading your top four guys and nobody else is going to get you anything. Sammy Coates might get you something. You're not going to get you something if he's not on the field at all. But yeah, I could see we were having a conversation, you know, again, it's like, is Sammy Coates destined to be Justin Hunter, a guy who eventually goes somewhere and people say, well, look, I mean, he's a guy who's a big guy. He's a fast guy. He can do some things. He has some pedigree because he was taken, you know, pretty high in the draft by a team a few years ago. But he just hasn't worked out. Is that what he's destined to be? Is he going to be that guy?
Oh, wow. You know, let's look at Justin Hunter's stats so far during his first, 4 or 5 years.
Coach, by the way, played 191 special team snaps, which was 43% of the special team snaps.
Here's where Justin Hunter is right now at his career. 78 receptions, just over 1,300 yards, a nice healthy average of 16.7 yards per catch, 12 touchdowns, and I believe I found that half of those touchdowns came in the red zone. He has had his share of drops, but one thing that several people will continue to point out to you with Justin Hunter, and it's fair, is the fact that he has never had a top tier quarterback throwing him the football. And I personally right now I like what Justin Hunter has put on tape more than I have Sammy Coates.
This is probably going to surprise you, and again I'll bring us back to Coates versus Hayward Bay. Sammy Coates played 80 more offensive snaps than Darius Hayward Bay. That may not surprise you. But he played 77 more special team snaps than Darius Hayward Bay.
Well, remember, Darius Hayward Bay missed several games.
Yeah, he missed some games there in the middle of the season as well.
I mean, he missed several games with that foot injury there from the Baltimore game on. Geez, I forget when he returned, but he missed, six or something games like that. That's a lot of time to miss.
Yeah. On the season, he only played make sure I get it right. yeah, he did. He did. He didn't play from week in the Baltimore game. He, you know, five snaps offensively. He'd played 62 snaps the week before offensively and against New England. After that, he only played 30 offensive snaps. 25 of those came in that Cleveland game at the very end. Yeah, so he did. Yeah, he missed from week 8 to week 15, basically.
Right. And look, we know what Darius Hayward Bay has no upside left to him. He hasn't really produced as a wide receiver during his time in Pittsburgh. He's still a guy with one foot in the league, and that foot in the league is mostly related to his speed and his ability to play on special teams and nothing more. And I like guys like that. But when you're constructing a roster this year, you have to ask yourself, is a player ascending or descending? And I can't see where Darius Hayward – you're either moving forward in life or backwards in life, right, David? You're not standing still. So Darius Hayward Bay, I think, is moving backwards. That's why I really think that you just can't go with, you know, what he is at this point, because what you think he's going to be in 2017 probably isn't going to be even as good as it was in 2016.
Let's go to the other guy who, you know, is suffering a similar fate as life passes him by, Sanquez Golson. You know, you mentioned Mike Hilton as the interesting guy here. The cornerback position, look, we know the two starters. We know two guys who are making the team, and William Gay now it looks like is a lock. Sensabaugh is a lock. So,
Artie Burns, Cockrell, locks too.
Well, yeah, the two starters. Yeah, so said those. So we got four. So the question is, I mean, is it Sanquez Golson versus Mike Hilton if Sanquez Golson can ever find the field?
Well, you're probably going to keep six, right? Six corners, four safeties, six corners, 10 defensive backs.
Well, right, you know, is Dangerfield and Golden are your backup safeties, and you know, so the question is there anybody else who's going to emerge out of that mix? Yeah,
and there doesn't appear as though that's going to be the case. So I think it comes down to, and don't forget Cameron Sutton's making this team as well too.
No, right, Cam, right, I did forget Cam, so he's on. Yeah, so it's Hilton versus Golson.
Well, don't forget Brian Allen sitting out there as well too. You know,
right. It goes right back to what we talked about the first podcast we did this season. Those two, and that was maybe before Hilton had even emerged to that when we put it together. Right. So those three guys are battling for a spot.
I think it at this point, and to hear, and maybe this is a good time to kind of start transitioning into what Carnell Lake said this morning on Steelers Nation Radio. It sounds like, and it's hard, you know, it's obviously hard to read into coaches' comments before the first preseason game, but Carnell Lake really seems to like Mike Hilton, sang his praises this morning. It really sounds like this, what could potentially be a sixth cornerback spot could come down between Brian Allen and Sanquez Golson more so than, in other words, I think Hilton is inside that bubble right now with his face pressed up to the outside, smiling at Brian.
Well, there are five guys ahead of him.
There are five guys ahead of Hilton, but Cameron Sutton's missed a lot of time, so is he really ahead of Hilton right now?
I think he's a dead solid, you know, write it in blood, yeah, ahead of him. Now, maybe not on the depth chart, but on making the roster, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely on making a roster. You're not going to cut Cameron Sutton, but I'm talking about as if you were to open the season tomorrow, you know, you're not going to throw Cameron Sutton out there right now, whereas you'd be more inclined probably to put Mike Hilton out there. In my opinion. Now, of course, as the season goes on, you hope Sutton ascends and becomes what you think he might be and on. But I guess in short, what I'm trying to say is I think Hilton, barring an injury and just a total collapse, is going to make this roster as
52nd guy or 53rd guy.
Yeah, maybe a little bit higher than that, but he's gonna be, I think he's gonna be number what would that be, six, right?
Six. Yeah, six.
Golson and
Golson better get on the field soon.
Golson better get on the field soon, and Brian Allen better show that he can play some special teams during the preseason if he wants even a shot to make it as a seventh corner. So I think right now, if you're keeping six. You know,
I don't see him keeping seven. I mean, Brian Allen obviously has the advantage of, I mean, he's an easy ticket to the practice squad as a, you know, kind of undeveloped, physically gifted, you know, guy who's not going to get claimed on waivers, almost guaranteed, you know, go to the practice squad and learn the game type stuff.
Here is what Carnell Lake said this morning about, and some of the names that he dropped in here is going to throw you back in time here. Lake starts off first talking about Hilton, saying he's tenacious. He's got some physical tools to help him make plays. He's a willing tackler. He's smart, and he can play multiple positions back there. And so he adds a lot of value to the defensive backs. And a lot of people need to be reminded that Hilton played, you know, safety and cornerback at Ole Miss. Lake was eventually asked.
What year was he? I mean, obviously, you know, Sanquez Colson went to Ole Miss. I mean, this is a little bit interesting. What year was he?
Oh yeah, they played the two spent a little bit of time together there at Ole Miss for sure. I think. Hold on just a minute here, and I'll pull up. I mean, Hilton. Seemed like he came out year before last, right? Played at Mississippi, undrafted in 2016. He has since spent time with the Jaguars and Patriots last season, and of course he spent some of the season on the Steelers practice squad last year. So,
okay, so you know what's interesting there is obviously the Steelers in scouting Golson, they saw Hilton. I mean, this year we're talking about two guys who played together and came out at the same time. One's a second-round pick. One's an undrafted free agent. I mean, doesn't mean the second-round pick is, you know, the better guy. But, I mean, the Steelers looked at this. They were sitting there watching Sanquez Golson. They saw Hilton play. I mean, you would think that – and, again, we're 2 years removed, so what matters is today. But you would think – that Sanquez Golson's, if he could ever get on the damn field, they thought he was a better player. Now they just need to see him play. And that's going to be very interesting if Golson comes back and is able to play, you know, two or three preseason games and competing against a guy who was in his college, you know, his year, his college defensive backfield battling for that last spot. I haven't seen it talked about. I'm sure somebody has talked about it, but it's, you know, that's an interesting subplot here.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, look, they had even, I think, scouted that other safety that was at Ole Miss as well too, who Trey Elston, I think. I think they even brought Trey Elston in for a pre-draft visit in 2016. There, I don't remember Mike Hilton being brought in for a pre-draft visit in 2016, and then obviously, you know, a couple years ago they had drafted Golson out of Ole Miss as well too. But you know, in short, I mean, Lake continued to sing the praises of Hilton, who, you know, let's not forget he's 5'9", 184 pounds or something. Lake was asked if Mike Hilton reminds him a little bit of remember Willie Williams several years ago?
Yeah, sure.
He was asked if he reminds him of Willie Williams, who Lake of course played with some. And Lake said not only, you know, somewhat agree with that comp, but also offered up one of his own. He said, "Absolutely, you could move Willie around." He went on to say Willie was fast, very fast and smart, and he wound up being a starter here for the Steelers. He went on to say another guy that I would say back in the day, a lot of people may not remember his name, and this will throw you back in time, David. Chris Odom. Remember Chris Odom?
Jeez, yeah.
Lake says he was also a key contributor on defense for a number of years here, not only on special teams, but also on defense. He played the dime back, and that's kind of how I see Mike's role.
Interesting, talking about the dime, bringing that up, because we haven't talked a lot about that. We'll see. You know, I've been a big fan of that as opposed to some of the other things schematically that they should be doing. They should be playing more dime. And Sean Davis gives you that versatility, as do a couple other guys. So, yeah, that's interesting that he brought that up.
And Lake went on to later on saying that in that interview, he says he's happy to be here. We picked him up basically off the street midway through the season last year to help us on the practice squad. And we noticed that he had some particular skills that allowed us to believe that, hey, this guy's got something and he's proven to be a standout.
I didn't realize I had, you know, as the season moves on, those kind of back end practice squad moves get lost in the noise a little bit. And I hadn't realized that he had spent that much time with the Steelers last year. So they're more familiar with him than I had realized. Okay. So he's going to be an interesting guy to watch. A couple things. One,
Golson's not going to make it. He's just not going to make it.
He's not going to make it if he doesn't play. That's for sure. I mean, he's got to get on the field. I have a belief that, you know, guys in pedigree don't go away. You've got to prove you don't have it. But if you can't play, you can't play. And I don't mean you can't physically, you know, you're not able to play. It's just like you're physically not on the field. So, I mean, it's just a simple thing for him that he's got to get on the field, you know, ASAP for anything to go his way.
Sounds like your Easy Bake Oven's ready.
getting a little news here. The news of the morning in the NFL was apparently Devonta Freeman's the highest paid running back in the NFL, you know, until Le'Veon Bell shows up. I mean, I was laughing at the headlines and I was going to, you know, say something about it on Twitter, but I haven't managed to, I've managed to delete those tweets three times when I started them. When you looked at his contract, what stood out to you?
With Devonta Freeman?
Yeah.
I mean, apparently, according to reports, average yearly value of $8.25 million, which is slightly more than what Buffalo Bills running back LeSean McCoy currently earns. And, I don't need to take my shoes off to figure this out. That still falls way short of what Bell's $12.12 million franchise tag amount is. And probably a full $4 million, right at a $4 million short of probably what Le'Veon Bell was offered that he turned down, long-term deal.
Yeah, so it's a little bit disingenuous. I mean, I understand people are writing he's the highest paid running back in the NFL, but it's a little bit disingenuous to say that.
Right. I mean, as far as signed contracts go, he is right now.
Right.
And, you know, we all hope that changes here very soon when Bell signs that tender. But as Joel Corey quickly pointed out, Devonta Freeman's contract doesn't give Le'Veon Bell new ammunition for a long-term deal with the Steelers if franchised again in 2018. Corey went on to write, I doubt Le'Veon Bell hits Devonta Freeman's $22 million of guarantees on a long-term deal with Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown is at $19 million in guarantees on a $17 million per year deal. So, if the Steelers, you know, we talked about this, you know, a few times, Alex and I as well, too. It sounds like the only way, you know, the Steelers are going to have Le'Veon Bell back in Pittsburgh in 2018 is to pop that $14.5 million franchise tag on him. And unless Le'Veon Bell comes way, look, we talked about this as well, too. You put a franchise tag on a guy, you're telling him that he's worth that a year. So it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for Le'Veon Bell to say, look, let's use that as a starting point as average yearly value. Are the Steelers going to give him another contract offer north of the franchise tag next offseason? Or are they just going to say, here, we'll give you the same offer we offered you last year. Take it or leave it. And if you don't, you can earn you another $14.5 million this year. And then we'll say sayonara to you after the season's over.
Yeah, as I said kind of 2 weeks ago, I now think Le'Veon Bell will never sign a multi-year deal with the Steelers. So it's just a question of, in my mind, whether he's franchised next year or not. I think his days as a Steeler are limited to two seasons or one season.
Yeah, I mean, hard to argue against that right now because, I mean, the worst thing that can happen to Le'Veon Bell right now is him suffer, you know, not play another full season and maybe, you know, come up short of his numbers last year, which we all, I mean, if you work out the averages, if he plays in 15 games, you know, he should He might approach 2,500 yards or at the very least 2,000 total yards from scrimmage. And if he does that, you know, he's still going to be considered one of the best backs in the league along with David Johnson in Arizona. But even so, the running market, running back market, I mean, who else is going to get a deal between now and next offseason that could even threaten the franchise?
They're only two backs in the league that you're having a conversation with in terms of Le'Veon Bell are David Johnson and Ezekiel Elliott. So, you know, we know Zeke's on the second year of his rookie deal, and you just mentioned Johnson, so it is what it is.
Right. I mean, I'm trying to rack my brain to see if any other veteran running backs are, you know, might, but I can't, you know, come up with any that would even threaten the franchise tag number of $12.12 million right now. So, I don't know. I sure would like to be a fly on the wall to know what Le'Veon Bell might be saying to himself on this Wednesday.
He's saying, "Get these first two preseason games over, so I can, you know, get into camp."
Yeah, you know, and Joel Corey brought up an interesting point in an article that he wrote yesterday on CBS Sports, saying that even though Le'Veon Bell can't negotiate a long-term deal right now with the Steelers, he still can negotiate his playing amount for this year, you know, his tender. So that's something that a lot of people probably don't know. You know, it's not going to happen, but if the Steelers wanted to pay Le'Veon Bell $14.5 million in 2017, they could. And also another thing that Joel Corey pointed out is obviously Bell might be pushing the Steelers to give him some sort of guarantee that they won't place the franchise tag on him next year. And as we know, you're not going to strong arm the Steelers like that. I think Kevin Colbert said as much in a late night interview on DVE last night, you know, saying we're not going to give up any of our tools, if you will, when it comes to negotiating tools. And in essence saying, you know, none of that's going to be in play here. So if Le'Veon Bell plays this year, which he's going to, one would think, because he stands to lose, I think, a little over $700,000 a game should he hold out into the regular season, he's going to play for $12.12 million, and that's it.
Right, and that's not chump change. So, you know, let's be clear about that. He will be the highest paid running back this season in the NFL. So he's going to play. I mean, I don't want to say it's a non-event, but it's pretty close to a non-event. I mean, we'll figure out what stupid stuff I can do if Le'Veon Bell actually misses any regular season action because he's boycotting playing football. Okay, so the depth chart came out, and it's an interesting depth chart because, as you pointed out, 900 guys are not practicing because of bumps and bruises, so they're not listed on the depth chart. There were two interesting things on it. One was that Fitz Toussaint was ahead of Nile Davis. That was interesting. It's not shocking, but it was interesting. I think maybe for Steeler fans, the more surprising thing was probably that Tyler Matakevich was not the backup at either inside linebacker position. He was third string at both of them, with L.J. Fort, the backup at one side, and Stevie Johnson, the backup at the other side, and then those guys being reversed as the third, as behind Matakevich in both spots. Did that surprise you at all?
Yeah, but I kind of, you know, if you look at the seniority aspect of how Mike Tomlin might have structured this, it would probably make sense. I think we all have learned over the years that while these things are fun to look at, write about, talk about, they don't mean the internet ink that they're written with. So, yeah, it definitely creates a conversation there, but judging by what's happened in practice so far, during training camp, Matakevich is running at both spots behind Shazier and Vince Williams, and then it goes on from there. Toussaint appears to possibly still be getting reps ahead of Nile Davis. Perhaps that's because his seniority related to being with the team over Nile Davis. That battle obviously is probably still up in the air right now. And I think the other kind of notable thing that stuck out that gives you a chuckle is the fact that Daniel McCullers is a second-team nose tackle behind Javon Hargrave, even though LT Walton has almost specifically been running as the second-team nose tackle behind Hargrave all through training camp.
Yeah, and LT Walton got, he's the backup to, I think he was on Cam's side, right? And Alualu was on Tuitt's side. So, you know, he is the backup listed somewhere. So, yeah, that was... You're right about that. McCullers' odds of making this team today, in your mind, are they greater than 40%?
No, sir.
Are they greater than 10%?
Barring injury, no. I mean, they're not greater than that. The old Animal House quote 0.00. You know, no, he hasn't. he obviously has probably a greater chance than that, but. I mean, look at it. I mean, Stephon Tuitt, Hargrave, Hayward. Alualu is going to be the top backup to both Tuitt and Hayward because John Mitchell said he can play both sides. LT Walton received some praise from John Mitchell this past week as well,
too. Yeah, he's making the LT Walton's making the team.
Right, so that's number five.
and then, you know, Maxey and McCullers are the other two guys.
Right, and that sixth guy isn't likely to dress, so why not go with the younger defensive end type, maybe in Maxey, who you brought up off the practice squad last year. McCullers just doesn't, I was down on this guy from the day he was drafted. I mean, but it's hard to be down on a sixth round draft pick, you know. You can't sit there and say, damn you, Kevin Colbert, damn you to hell. Really didn't like his upside right from the get-go. Now, he has shown a few moments. Look, he can drive a center back 15 yards off the snap, but he just can't get loose of him.
No, we've seen it. We've seen him drive a center past the quarterback on multiple occasions.
Right. Right, and you know he just can't get loose and find the quarterback. You know, occasionally he'll make a nice athletic move and beat a center and get a run stop. But you know, as far as a guy that you want to depend on potentially having to come into games to spell either your nose tackle or even a sub package down lineman, you can't do that with Daniel McCullers. Now, can you really do it with LT Walton? We'll see. But Walton is ascending while McCullers, isn't right now. So, and Johnny Maxey, I think, still sort of, obviously doesn't have a high ceiling with him, but he seems to be an ascending player as well, too. So, knowing that the Steelers are probably going to keep six in total, and we know who five of those are already, it comes down to Johnny Maxey versus Daniel McCullers, and I'm taking Maxey at this point.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with you. McCullers was a sixth round pick originally? He was a guy they took a shot at out of Tennessee. And it's never, if you've ever had the opportunity to stand next to the guy and just see how physically big and dominating he is, imposing he is. You know, there's always hope there, and look, we saw him do some things. He got the start against the Titans down there a couple years ago, which was a big opportunity for him. But the game's changed a little bit. He's a guy who just, he's been what he's been, and it hasn't really changed that much. And obviously, the signing of Alualu basically. It takes over Ricardo Matthews' role, who I was a bit of a fan of last year, as regular listeners will remember, and LT Walton's kind of continued development, which we haven't seen out of McCullers. I mean, I think we've seen LT Walton kind of become a better football player here over the past couple of years, and I'm not necessarily denigrating Big Dan, but we haven't seen a level of improvement that gives you anything to get excited about. And Javon Hargrave. He's gonna be that guy, and he's still only gonna be on the field between 30 and 35% of the time, most likely. So, yeah, as you say, there's just probably at the end of the day not enough room for him with the other guys, and you're only gonna dress five on game day, and Walton's versatility and Alualu, those guys are definitely dressing. So, That's the way it's going to be.
I would agree. I mean, he's going to need an injury. And talking about McCullers, he's going to need an injury. And what's going on over there? You moving furniture?
I almost knocked my computer off the desk there, yes.
Okay. He's going to need an injury. And even if an injury happens, you know, would you look outside the organization at somebody else getting cut at that point as a better option maybe than Daniel McCullers?
Right. Okay. What else we got? What else is on the table here? Mike Tomlin's talking a little bit later today. We'll have that for you on Friday. That for us, that's, you know, half hour, 45 minutes away. So it'll be the last time he's accessible before the preseason game Friday night. What do you expect to see Friday night? Let's see, you know, we'll get into more of this on Friday, but a lot of guys aren't dressing, but you've got 90 guys in camp. There's not a numbers issue for the Steelers. They've got plenty of bodies out there. In terms of guys who are significant parts of the 2017 team, do you expect to see any of the guys out there?
Well, if Ben plays, it's not going to be much. Same with AB. I mean, I don't think I would even throw either one of those two out there, to be quite honest with you. With Pouncey dealing with an injury, I wouldn't expect to see him out there. If my starting offensive line plays any at all, it's just a series, and then I try to go from there. Now, I am excited to see B.J. Finney play some center, a lot of center in this, you know, throughout the preseason here, because that's his weakest position. We saw that he could play some guard last year, but I want to see him improve his center play there. So as far as offense goes, Finney, I obviously want to see the battle between Fitz Toussaint and Nile Davis at the running back position there. We'll probably see a good bit of those two guys maybe in the first half of the game. Oh, who else on offense, David? I mean, some of these wide receivers, Justin Hunter, if he's able to play, definitely excited about seeing him. Xavier Grimble, want to see him get a little bit more work as a blocker. Defensive side of football, want to see Walton play some nose tackle. Want to see what Johnny Maxey's got. Matakavich, obviously, at inside linebacker, excited to see that. Mike Hilton, who we already spent a lot of time on talking about, want to see him. Cody Sensabaugh, new Steeler, want to see him get some time on the outside. And, geez, I think that's about it.
It'd be interesting to see.
Joshua Dobbs for obvious reasons. T.J. Watt for obvious reasons. You know, the draft picks that'll be on the field. I think it goes without saying that you're excited to see what those guys can do in preseason action as well.
All right. We've highlighted the stuff through. Yeah, with Alex, you've been talking about the practices regularly. You and I didn't have a chance to talk about Friday Night Lights. Did anything go on there that just needs highlighted?
Yeah, and we kind of, because we had to recap both the Friday night practice and the Saturday practice in one podcast, because of the time constraints that were involved there, and plus on top of it, the Friday night lights practice got interrupted by bad weather. Not a lot happened, I don't think, overall.
Right,
you know,
right.
I think the most significant thing was Artie Burns left that practice with, you know, some sort of lower body injury and hasn't worked since. So I think that's the biggest development, you know, when it comes to there. I think it'll be interesting. Chicolo suffered a, what did Mike Tomlin call it, a hip flexor strain during yesterday's practice, and the lines at outside linebacker are already kind of short because James Harrison is back in sweats again after working on Sunday. Farrington Hugadin still not working fully at outside linebacker. The Steelers were down to three outside linebackers in practice yesterday, and they were T.J. Watt, Arthur Motes, and I'm drawing a blank here all of a sudden. Arthur Motes, T.J. Watt.
Man, Bud.
Oh, Bud. Yeah, Bud was back at practice. So those were your three working yesterday. you know, if that hip flexor strain with Chiclo is another day or two, you know, another day at least, and going to keep him out of the game Friday night, they might have to sign another outside linebacker body today. So we'll see when it comes to that transaction sometime today. And as you said, Mike Tomlin will speak here probably another 30 minutes or so, and we'll see what he has to say. We'll recap everything that he had to say during the Friday morning podcast, and you and I will take a little bit deeper look at the preseason game against the Giants there. So that's all I got right now, David. In the meantime, folks can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. They can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show at theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. As always, if you want to donate to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button upper right navigational bar. Have a great day, David.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.